Have you been looking to restart your health routine? Maybe lose some of those pandemic pounds, eat more superfoods, or get more exercise? Those all may be good things to do, but science writer Martha Zaroska argues in terms of living longer, those changes probably won't help you as much as improving your connections to other people. In fact, relationships, volunteering, and simple acts of kindness can help with the process of growing young. That's the title of her new book. And in January, I spoke with Martha Zaroska via Skype. So there's a lot of data in your book. And like any good journalist, you went on this quest to get scientific answers. Let's talk for a moment about the science behind your argument that human contact is more beneficial than, say, getting more exercise. You illustrate this by explaining how the mind communicates with the body, especially when we're under stress. Say more.
So, you know, humans are social apes. We evolved to be surrounded by others of our tribe. And this is when our bodies function the best. When you think about it, you know, in our evolutionary past, when we were alone, it usually meant that we were alone on the savannah, so potentially facing lots of dangers, all the lions and accidents that could happen to us. And as such, we were in a state of stress. So our bodies adapted to recognize whether we are safe with others, or maybe they should be preparing for accidents, for predators, and so on and so on. So we have lots of different systems in our body. For example, the fight or flight response, the HPA axis, so-called the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, that starts with the signal in your brain that tells you that there is a reason to be stressed, and then sends all this soup of hormones throughout your body, basically one triggering another and so on and so on. And all these hormones prepare your body to fight and to face all those dangers when you are alone. The problem is that these days our stressors are very, very different. We are chronically stressed by things such as mortgages, you know, school reports and traffic and work issues. And all these systems, so the HPA axis, the sympathetic nervous system as well, they're chronically activated.
When you say chronically activated, what you mean is that it is basically all the time where we're in this fight or flight, or the HPA axis is activated. And that does something very specific to our bodies.
Exactly. All these hormones such as cortisol, you know, the stress hormone or adrenaline, they keep flooding our bodies the whole time. And with all the detrimental downstream effects, such as, for example, higher risk of diabetes or cardiovascular disease. And at the same time, you know, what we also get from being with other people are so-called social hormones. So things such as oxytocin or serotonin, endorphins, vasopressin, which both make us feel trusting and connected to other people, but also have very real downstream effects on our health.
So social connection helps improve our hormone levels. And you give several examples, but there's one, the Rosetta effect. This is an actual place where the death rate at one time was about 35% lower than the general population. They weren't particularly healthy people by Western standards, but you're saying they had deep social connections.
Yes. So basically nobody was dying of heart attacks in Rosetta, which started really attracting attention of scientists and doctors back in the 1960s. And what they have discovered exactly was that it was not the diet. It was not any other lifestyle habits, because they were smoking, they were drinking, you know, and they also didn't have anything particular in their genes. But what was special about the place was the community. So people there, for example, had 22 civic organizations, even though there were only 2,000 inhabitants. They were constantly meeting each other. They were constantly visiting neighbors. They were really taking care of their public space, having parties, volunteering, helping each other out. And most likely this was what caused this amazing health of the inhabitants. And what the doctors and researchers back then also predicted, that were they to ever abandon their ways, their health would deteriorate as well. And unfortunately, this is exactly what happened generations later in the 70s and 80s and so on. And when people started pursuing, you know, the so-called American dream and living in the suburbs, buying cars, working longer hours, and they stopped being so connected to their community, their health also just went back to American average.
But Martha, this is especially resonant to me because it got me thinking about church groups during this pandemic who have argued that they are essential because they offer a deep sense of community. I mean, we learn from your book that human connection is not just a human want, it's a human need. And all I could think in reading your book is, how do we do this when we can't do it in the traditional ways we used to right now? Is this social isolation shortening all of our lives?
I'm hopeful that it's not, because it's quite a temporary state. You know, if it was something that we had to live with for years, I would be much more worried. It is true that we need the connection, and, you know, that loneliness has very serious detrimental effects on our health. People who are lonely have higher blood pressure. They have even different gene expression when it comes to cancer, for instance. So it is a very serious issue. But on the other hand, you know, there are ways to still connect even in pandemic times. You know, you can call, you can volunteer online as well, for instance, which is an amazing way to also boost your health through connection and helping others. You can engage in acts of kindness, which is another thing that is very important for our health. Mm-hmm. You can try to look for meaning in life, another thing which really is connected to our health and longevity.
You mentioned kindness, but we can't overstate it. I mean, in your book, you note that kindness, as well as experiencing empathy, is an important part of keeping healthy. And you actually went through an experiment that showed performing simple acts of kindness actually changes hormone levels.
Yes, I tried to replicate other research that was conducted on hundreds of subjects. And I've done it with collaboration with scientists from University College London, King's College London. And what they helped me do was measure my levels of stress hormone cortisol. And we've done it for 7 days, morning, afternoon, and evening. And on some of the days, I performed acts of kindness. So I would sit in the morning and prepare a list of all the nice things I could do for people. And then on other days, I would just live my life as usual. And when the results came in, we were really surprised to see that you could really clearly see which days were my kindness days, because my levels of cortisol were very much different, or much, you could say, better on the days when I engaged in kindness, no matter how stressful the actual days were for me.
This is remarkable. Let's slow it down, because what you're saying is that there were measurable differences in the day-to-day. We're not talking over time. You can actually change your levels based on what you do for others in any given day.
Totally. We could really see it on my cortisol. And, you know, there was an actual proper research study done in California where people were randomized to conduct acts of kindness, whereas the control group wasn't doing anything. And they could see the differences in actual gene expression of those people in their white blood cells that were less tuned towards inflammation if they were doing kindness. And we know that inflammation is something that's really detrimental to our health long term. And they were also not doing anything huge, just like me. You know, the acts of kindness they were engaging in were, for example, buy a coffee for a stranger or let others ahead of you in traffic. Really, really small things. And you could see it on the level of gene expression. So this is really, really not only fascinating, but, you know, how physiological it all is.
Before I let you go, we have to talk about dietary fads. And to those fads, you basically say, ditch the goji berries and take vitamins in moderation. I mean, this is so against what we've been told for so long. What's your takeaway message?
I mean, certainly don't ditch goji berries if you really like them, if you eat them for
yes.
the flavor. It's perfectly fine. I like them myself. But it's correct that from a perspective of an average person, someone who is obsessed about their health, following all the fad diets and running every day and so on and so on, but also lonely and pessimistic and never engaging in any social life or volunteering and so on, compared to another person who is very optimistic and engaged in their community and having lots of friends, but perhaps not eating so healthy, it's really hard to say who will live longer, but it's possible that it may be the couch potato who is surrounded by loving others. So, you know, we have to really recognize how important these connections are for our health. And of course, the best scenario is when you are socially connected and optimistic and you eat healthy and exercise. But if something had to give, completely giving up on your social life is not a good health strategy.
Marta Zaraska's book is Growing Young, How Friendship, Optimism, and Kindness Can Help You Live to 100. Marta, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Tonya.